This is Greg Gagne, and you're listening to Wrestling Nostalgia.
This is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty. Greetings, everyone, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me. And man, I'm super excited about today's episode and today's interview. I do hope you follow me on social media, and if you do, you knew that, man, I just could not wait. And the moment this interview was completed, I literally went straight out to social media and announced the guest, because I'm super excited with who I have on today and who I got to talk to. It was a fun conversation. There will be follow-up interviews in the future, and I'm super stoked. Today's guest on the podcast is Greg Gagne. Man, it was so much fun to talk to Greg. He's a guy that I've wanted to talk to forever. Very easy to interview, very open with stories, fun to chat with, super nice guy. And like I said, man, we talked nearly an hour, pretty much an hour. And we barely even scratched the surface of his career and his involvement in professional wrestling. So there will be future interviews with Greg. He said he'd love to come back on, do more in the future. So that's going to happen down the road. Thank you again for all your support and listening to us. Make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Make sure you follow us on all the social media outlets. But man, I don't. There's nothing else I want to talk about right now. I just want to get right to it so that you can hear this great interview. How fun it is! So let's take a break and come back with my interview with Greg Gagne. So stick around. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number two, and Screams.
And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. At this time, I'm being joined by Greg Gagne. Greg, how are you?
Well, you know, I'm not doing too bad. How about yourself? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for joining us. Let's dive right in, because there's a lot to talk about with your career, your time in wrestling. You were obviously trained by your father, Vern. Obviously. let's talk about your dad for a minute. Your dad's probably, he's obviously most known and most remembered as the owner of the AWA for training countless wrestlers. But I don't think people really grasp how big a star your dad was through the 50s and 60s, especially on the Dumont Network. Talk to us a little bit about that time period for your dad's career.
Well, he started wrestling 1949, right out of college. And he always used to talk about his first. He was NCAA champion a number of times, Big Ten champion, wrestled on the 1948 Olympic team. Then when he came back, he turned pro. And his first match was in Minneapolis. And he used to tell the story with Abe King Kong Cashy. And some of his football buddies, he was also an All-American football player at Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And was Bud Grant, who eventually coached the Minnesota Vikings. Their quarterback was a guy named Billy Byberry, successful businessman and great athlete. Harvey Solon, who ended up being a promoter for us in northern Minnesota in the Duluth area. And then Jim Malosky, who was later a football coach for high school and played a semi-pro football for a while. So they were in the front row, and Vern's wrestling to save King Kong Cashy, and he was a big, rugged guy. And he was choking Vern on the ropes, and the four of them jumped up. And Cashy leaned over, and he said, "Sit down, punks." And they all went back down. So he won that match by disqualification, and then he was told by the promoters, "We think you're a little too small here, so we're going to send you down to Texas, and you're going to wrestle in the Texas, Louisiana, and do kind of the junior heavyweight type mm-hmm. deal." So we had a trailer, and my mom and myself, and I was only, what was I? Well, almost 2 years old. I was born in 48. So this was just, in the middle of 1949, the end of 1949. So we go down there, and the first week there, he beats the junior heavyweight champion. And from there, and I remember we lived in this trailer, and across the park from us was a drive-in theater.
Oh, yeah.
So when he'd come home after the matches, I'd be up waiting for him, and he'd put me on his shoulders, and we could watch the drive-in movie, but we couldn't hear it.
Yeah.
But I still remember those things.
Yeah.
So he was so successful down there that all of a sudden he got a call from Oh God, the promoter for Chicago at that time.
Was it Fred Kohler?
No, yeah, Fred
Nope.
Kohler.
Yeah.
Yep. Fred gave him a call and said, "Hey, Vernon, why don't you come back to Chicago? And we're going on the network TV. DuPont Network's putting wrestling on. We
Yeah.
want to get you on." So Vern came back, and this is the story he told. He goes into the locker room. There's about 30 wrestlers in there. And Fred Kohler comes up to say, "Vern, we're glad to have you here." He said, "Tonight, we're going to dress you as a Martian, and we're going to lower you down from the ceiling." And he said, "Well, the hell you are." He said, "I was a Big Ten champion, a state high school wrestling champion, a Big Ten champion, NCAA champion, wrestled an Olympic team. I got my tights and my boots. I'm going down to the ring, and every one of these SOBs here can come down, and I'll take them on one at a time, two at a time, or three at a time. And if I don't beat them all, I'll quit." Nobody got in the ring with him. He stood down there for 10 minutes. Nobody came down. So Fred let him go in the ring with his tights and boots. But 1950 was 50, 50, 51 was huge for him. They would bring in the NWA champion, and that would be Lou Thesz. He'd come in for appearances and wrestle whoever the top guy was on the DuPont network at that time. And Vern was the first athlete besides Babe Ruth. That 1950, he made over $100,000. He was that popular. And they didn't know how strong the TV was. He said, so Pat, what they would do at that time, then the guys on the network, maybe they would take Killer Kowalski and Lou Thesz and put them up in Boston. They put Dick the Bruiser and somebody down in St. Louis. And they would take them off the TV, those guys, and move them around. So Vern and Pat O'Connor are going to Buffalo, New York for a tag team match. And see, the plane's late. They get into Buffalo, it's snowing, and they get in the cab, and there's traffic everywhere. And Pat turns to Vern, he says, "Man, this is going to kill our gate tonight. The snow and all this traffic, what's going on?" They get to the arena, it was for wrestling. They turned away about 20,000 people that night. That's when the light went on for him. How strong and what TV meant for professional wrestling.
And I grew up in Indiana. I'm a huge Dick the Bruiser fan.
Okay,
And
good.
from 66 through about the early 80s, your dad was in a partnership with Bruiser and Snyder in Chicago as the
Yep.
Chicago Wrestling Club. So how did that come about that there was this partnership with those two?
Well, our TV, the AWA TV, Vern, when he finally came back to Minneapolis, he bought into the Minneapolis Wrestling Club, and he knew how much TV meant for wrestling. So he expanded the wrestling from Minneapolis to Wisconsin, to Winnipeg, to Denver. Denver, Chicago, Milwaukee, Green Bay. Let's see. Eventually Salt Lake City, San Francisco, when once
Shire.
Shires, yeah, got out of there. He wouldn't step on anybody's toes, but he expanded the AWA and went all the way across Canada. And our TV was so strong in Chicago, and Bruiser and Wilbur Snyder, we had their TV on, but it wasn't as strong a channel in a good time slot. So they became partners in there. And expanded that, and the success. I mean, the AWA ratings, and we were from as far, let's see, Green Bay, Wisconsin, all the way to the West Coast, from Minneapolis or from Winnipeg to St. Louis. St. Louis eventually put our TV show on there too. So that was our territory. And we were getting television ratings of a 24 rating with a 64 share of the audience in the AWA. The only show that beat us nationally was 60 Minutes. They had the same rating, but they had a 65 share. So what that means is 65% of the people that had TV on were watching that. 64% were watching wrestling. So in our time slots. So Bruiser and Wilbur and Vern became partners in Chicago and Hammond, Indiana, and a few other places.
Well, you made your debut in 72 in the AWA. Were there ever any discussions about you going out into other territories and getting some seasoning and experience, or was it always, we're going to train you, we're going to put you on here in Minneapolis?
No, I mean, I had opportunities to go other places. I was raising a family, didn't really want to be away from them. But the AWA was so hot.
Right. Yeah.
It had such great talent in it. I mean, you know, I'm having the opportunity to work with people like Ray the Crippler Stevens and Nick Bockwinkel, and, you know, even guys like Mad Dog Vachon, who is, you know, a different story about that guy.
Yeah.
All the best talent wanted to be in the AWA.
Yeah.
And it only ran with maybe 18 or 20 guys. So you learn. And I remember when I came out of the training camp with Ken Patera, Ric Flair, Jim Brunzel, the Iron Sheik, Bob Bruggers, and myself, they all started wrestling 3 months before I did. My job to start out was to be the referee and haul the ring truck, drive the ring truck from town to town. And Vern said, if you're going to be in this business, you're going to learn from the bottom up. And you have to understand every part of it and everybody's job and how hard it is, and respect these people that are doing this.
Yeah.
So I ran that damn ring and the refereeing for 3 months. And I end up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And it's 100 degrees. And this George Scrap Iron Kadaski, he had the other ring truck. He told me, now, so when you get to these towns, the secret is get some young guys to help you. Give them free tickets to get in. So I get about six guys. They come in and we put the ring up. I said, okay, guys, when the matches are over, I'm refereeing all the way through. So I'll give me about 15 minutes afterwards, start getting the ring down. I'll come out and we'll get it going. So, man, I refereed all the matches. The last one was Dr. X, and I forget who he wrestled. And my God, they went about 35, 40 minutes dying. So I go back in the locker room, and Dr. X, Dick Byers, he says to me, hey, you got guys to help with the ring? I said, yeah, there's six of them out there. He says, have a couple beers before you go back out there. Cool yourself down. So we drank a couple beers and talked about the matches and the wrestling in it, and probably ended up 20 minutes. So he goes in to shower. I walk out, the ring's up, and there's nobody there.
Oh, no.
So it took me, I got them taking down the ring about 5 a.m.
Oh, man.
And loading up the truck and drove back to Minneapolis. I got back to Minneapolis. I think I got in about 7:30, 7:45, and my phone rings, and I'm just going to bed. Hey, it's Wally Carbo. And I said, yeah, Wally. Hey, you got to get in a ring truck and drive up to Winnipeg today. I said, Wally, I haven't been to bed. I just got home. Well, what were you doing, pal? What was I doing? I'm just doing my job, taking down the ring by myself and driving it back. I haven't been to sleep. I'll never make it to Winnipeg. Oh, but pal, I said, I'll kill myself if I try that. So that was my last day on the ring. They got George to make the trip up to Winnipeg.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned Jim Brunzel, who obviously was, I mean, that's a key guy in your career. You soon started teaming with Brunzel, the High Flyers. You guys were a great team. And you had two runs as tag champs.
Great. We were the best ever.
There you go. Okay. Well, I mean, that's an argument we can make. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like I said, you know, you guys had two runs of tag champs. Did you enjoy your time teaming with Jim?
Oh, yeah. Well, we met in college. We played football together. I went on it was funny because at that time, Murray Warmath was the head coach. Mm-hmm. And Murray's philosophy was he liked big guys, big running backs, big quarterbacks, didn't throw the ball much. And I could throw the heck out of the ball. And I had set a couple, one game in my last high school game, completed 13 out of 15 passes for like 300 yards and four touchdowns and ran for over 100 yards. So I came in, and Murray's philosophy was, because they were limited on the scholarships, he gave the guys from the South, he'd get up the black athletes and the other athletes from Pittsburgh and that area, bring them into Minnesota. And the Minnesota kids, he'd give one kid a scholarship and the rest he'd get to walk on. And Jim was a walk on, as I was. And he was a running back. And another guy named Jeff Wright, who played at Edina High School, He was a running back. So we'd have to scrimmage against all the scholarship guys every week. And we beat them every single week. And we came to our now Murray in the spring then moved me to a defensive corner and this other running back, Jeff Wright, to safety. And he said, you know, and I said, Murray, I really like to play quarterback. Well, the quarterback was Sandy Ray Stevens, who was Sandy Stevens' brother. He was 6'3" and he went about 215 pounds. And the running backs were Jim Carter, who ended up playing linebacker for the replaced Ray Nitschke in Green Bay. He was the fullback at 240, and the other running back was Barry Mayer from North Dakota, who was 225. So we're in the spring, and we had won the spring game. So now we come into the fall and we got a scrimmage. And Jeff Wright was the safety. He got to make the defensive calls for the defensive backs. So we had two calls called Cora and Sally. Sally meant that the safety came up to break up the end runner, take on the blockers. Cora, the cornerback, did. So of course, Jeff, Cora, Cora. So here they come on the end sweep. And I got to take on first Barry Mayer and then Jim Carter. And I came up and man, I got blasted and Carter ran for a touchdown. And Murray warned him out, run that play again there, Gagne, you got to get tough in there. So I came up again and this time I got missed the block. I got away from the block. I hit Carter. And the next thing I knew, I went back and he stepped on me and he stumbled, luckily, and only went about 5 yards. And Murray, I run that play again. Jesus. So I thought, oh, shit. So this time I get up there and I went and I hit him right in the thigh with my helmet. And the next thing I know, I'm sitting over on the sidelines with the trainer. And Jim Marshall was his name. And he says, come on, Greg, let's go back to the locker room. I got my helmet off. I'm on one knee. And I said, but look at the clowns and the elephants here going around. And he says, come on, we're going in. So I had a good concussion. So then we came back, and Murray moved me back. He redshirted me, is what he did. So we're going to play Michigan. And they got Clinton Jones, and I mean, they got a heck of a team. And Murray says, hey, Greg, you can, as a red shirt, you can play one game. So I'm going to play against Michigan. And I said, well, Murray, I'll have to cover Clinton Jones. I said, he just set a world record in the 100-yard dash. I mean, I don't think I can stay with him. He says, well, you're smart. You're smart. You can. And I said, well, Murray, I'm smart enough to know I can't. So he laughed. And he ended up writing a nice letter to Wyoming, and that's where I ended up going out there and playing quarterback, finished my career out there.
Yeah, well, and you and Jim, you split
So
up.
anyhow, that's where I met Jim.
Yeah, that's where you met Jim.
Yeah, get back to that. Jim was a great a track star. He had set a high jump record in the state of Minnesota his senior year. He could jump like a son of a gun. I mean, if you want
Well,
drop kicks, man, he's
yeah.
up bang. He had the best probably drop kick in professional wrestling.
I agree. But I mean, like you and Jim split up, you started wrestling singles, and then and you kind of you did a memorable feud with Bruiser Brody. And do you think that kind of clicked because of that David versus Goliath thing? Because I mean, you were smaller than him. He was this madman. I mean, man, it just clicked.
Didn't it? And who would have ever thought that? You know, I didn't want to wrestle him, but he had racked me up pretty good. And he wanted, I tell you, when Brody came into Minneapolis in the AWA, he first had Sergeant Slaughter. And I had wrestled Brody and Hanson with Jim over in Japan. And we had some hellacious matches, but boy, I'll tell you what, talk about vicious. First time we got in the ring with him, we make a trip. Let me go back and then we'll get into it. That be okay? So Jim and I are going to Japan to wrestle in this big tournament they've got there. 2-week tournament. Tag teams. Giant Baba and Dory Funk Senior Junior are one team. Jumbo Tsuruta and Tenryu the other team. Hanson and Brody, and then Jim and myself. So we finish up in Salt Lake City, and we had won the tag team titles, and they had us on the road every night. We're in Salt Lake City in a cage match with Jerry Blackwell and the Sheik. And Blackwell threw me over the top rope, and my foot hit the top rope and twisted, and my knee burnt like a son of a bee. So we wrestled the match in Salt Lake, and now we have to fly to LA. Get up in the morning, and my knee is like that.
Yeah.
So we get on the plane, and I ask the flight attendants to get me some ice, and they iced it down. Get into LA. We got about an hour and a half layover. Then we get on the plane, and again, my knee is killing me. They give me ice packs. Fly to Tokyo. We get to Tokyo. We got to get right on a plane to Sapporo. We get to Sapporo. We've been in the air now 19 hours. And my knee is just boom, boom, boom. And we get we cab picks us up at the airport, and we had to get dressed in the cab and go right in the ring when we got to Sapporo. And we get in the ring, and we wrestled that night for about 12, 15 minutes and won the match. Next night, we've got Tsuruta and Tenryu. We wrestled them 52 minutes and won the match. And my knee is absolutely killing me. Next night, we get Giant Bubba and Dory Funk Jr., who was the NWA champion at the time. We end up winning that match, and we wrestled about 48 minutes. Knee's killing me. Next night, we get Hanson and Brody. We get in the ring, and all of a sudden, the place erupts. And here comes Hanson and Brody out. And I'm like this talking to Jim, and they come in from behind, or I can see them. Jim can't. And I said, "Keith, look out." Jim gets hit with the chain. I get hit with the cowbell. Out of the ring we go. They run us through the people into a wall, hit us with a fire extinguisher. We both cut up. And we're fighting to get back to the ring, and I got this knee all wrapped up, and I'm just limping on it. And this little Japanese guy gets up, and his chair falls down. So I grab it, and I take it, and I throw it like a frisbee. And here comes Hanson, and hit him right on the bridge of the nose. Down he went. We wrestled those guys for 35 minutes that night. And I remember, I came off the top rope. Brody had Jim, and I caught him with a good elbow, and he went right to his knees. And then I see Brunzell get thrown out over the top rope. And as I look up, Brody puts a bear hug on me, arms to my side, crouched down, and his head's about here. And all I can see is Hanson coming across the ring. Whoa, and
Oh
that was the
no.
last thing I remembered. So they won that night. And we went on, and the knee is absolutely killing me. We went on, and we finished the tournament against them in the finals, and we ended up sneaking one out over them and ended up winning the tournament, which was Hanson and Brody were like gods over there. So this really made us. But after we wrestled the first night, we were black and blue from here down from reaching up and hitting them. We just pounded the crap on them, but they pounded the hell out of us. So anyhow, so then we get back now, Minneapolis. I go in, they operate on my knee, they cut it open, the cartilage falls out in five pieces. They said, "How in the world did you do that?" So I was laid up for quite a while, and Brody had came in, and he probably tore it more on TV and did a knee drop across my leg before I went in for the surgery, and that really finished it off. So anyhow, so Brody's now in the AWA. He wrestles Sergeant Slaughter. He walks out of the ring and he says to Wally and Vern, "How do you like that?" "What's wrong with you?" "I don't want to wrestle with them." So then next, he wrestles Jerry Blackwell. A month later, walks out of the ring. And now I'm just coming off this, I'm back off the knee surgery, and I've been back in the ring a little bit. And he says to Wally and Vern, "I only want to wrestle one guy, Greg." And they came and told me, I said, "I don't want to get in a ring with him alone. Are you kidding me?" But he liked me because I had so much fire and I fought him back. A lot of guys were afraid of him, and he just, it wasn't a contest. But I battled my ass off to fight him, and I had good matches with him, which was, unheard of for most of the talent I went up against him. But he was a brute. So was Hansen.
Yeah. Well, I gotta ask, in 85, you teamed with Sergeant Slaughter. You talked about Sergeant Slaughter. And you started
Oh.
wearing fatigues and everything. What, whose idea was that, and what, how did that come up? I understand
Well,
you were teaming with Slaughter, part of the Cobra Corps or whatever,
yeah.
but how did they think that was a good fit for you?
Well, it wasn't too hard because Slaughter brought it up, but he wanted to take a partner like one of our TV guys, a Kenny J or somebody
Yeah,
like
yeah.
that. And Wally Carbo said, "Yeah, but that's not good, pal. I mean, with this talent we've got," he says, "Yeah, but that's the way it works better." And then the TV says, why don't you go work with Slaughter a little bit?" And then he decided, "Well, I'll take Greg, put him through this thing, and maybe this would be better for him, and maybe we'd get a tag team title or something." So I went through that whole deal with him, and
Was
it is
odd.
what it was. It is what it is.
Well, some things work, some things don't, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Well,
Well,
it was a good
something.
opportunity for me, and and it was for him too.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's easy to chuckle about it, but Slaughter was, I mean, 85 was so over. I mean, he was a huge draw, huge name. I mean, he was doing the G.I. Joe thing and everything else. So it's easy to chuckle about it, but I mean, it was a pretty good position at that time.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was, and we did well as a team, but it's funny because when you talk about tag team wrestling and the really successful teams, they had to have they had to think alike, and they had to really, I mean, the Rock and Roll Express. I mean, and the guys that were established like that, where we were really, when Jim came back and we became a team, we just meshed. We could think alike. We'd had the same background training. We knew when to do something, when not to do it. And when you get it, just t you take a cold partner, you don't have that rhythm and that same feel in the ring, the continuity that you have with a established partner that you can trust.
Yeah. Well, I
If
mean,
that makes any sense, but
it does. It does. It does. And speaking of something that clicked, Curt Hennig became AWA champion, and you and him had this. I mean, I thought it was a great feud. And it was natural, right? It fit because of the history with your fathers, with Vern and Larry, and then there was you and Curt. I mean, and Vern and Larry got involved, in the feud and everything else. And it
Thanks.
was.
That was the hardest thing. Kurt and I just wanted to wrestle each other.
Yeah.
I mean, with those two, they didn't like each other.
Yeah,
And
right.
Jim
Yeah.
trained Larry, and they both went to the same high school.
Yeah.
And God, it was hard. The two of us are in the ring, Vern screaming at me, Larry screaming at Kurt, "Do this, do that." And we're going, "Fuck, just let us go." Went back
Yeah.
out and said, and I said to my dad, "Just let me wrestle in there. But I can see what you need to do." I said, "Please." And Kurt was the same thing with his dad. He said, "God Almighty, just let the two of us go." But they couldn't help themselves. And
Right.
we had better matches when they weren't in the same town
Yeah,
when they
right.
were there.
Yeah, and I would ask the one thing that's always odd to me, you never had a run with the title, right? There was that time with Kurt. There was later, when Zbyszko won the title that I thought it was your time then. Why is that? Why did your dad never give you a run? Did they just feel you didn't need it? Or what? I mean, what was it? Just even if
I
it's a
don't
short
know.
reign, it's so peculiar to me.
I don't think I really wanted it. I mean, it would have been nice, but because my dad had, so they'd always say, "Well, you just got it because of Vern."
Yeah, okay.
I'd rather have gone somewhere else and wrestled and had the opportunity, because I think I could have carried it well.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't. I don't think I would have felt comfortable, really, because of that.
Yeah.
And with Vern's he was such a strong personality. I'm
Right.
always compared to him, and oh, you're just getting that because you're Vern's kid,
Yeah,
and
right.
that's why I wasn't.
Yeah, I see that because it felt, I mean, it does seem like a natural thing, but it would be hard. I mean, you're probably already trying to battle to get out from under the shadow and do your own thing a little bit, and
Well, I
that
kind of,
would make it worse.
one thing my dad told me when we started wrestling, he said, people are going to compare you to me, and
Yeah.
they're going to say you're following in your father's footsteps, which you are, but make your own footsteps and be your own personality. Don't try to be me. I mean, some of the stuff he taught us, our moves are going to be like his, but just be yourself. And
Yeah.
he said, and he told all of us that, every player, all of us, you have an inner person. When I train people, I tell them, in fact, when I was down in Louisville, I had CM Punk and a few of the guys,
Right.
and they were all pissed off that they couldn't get themselves established enough to get up to the WWE, especially CM Punk. And so he's all pissed off one day and about McMahon this and McMahon that. And I took the guys out the night before and got them drunk. Then the real them comes out. And I said, now, you guys, if you can project what you were telling me last night and how you were telling me, that's the real you. And if you can establish that real personality that you really are, and don't try to be somebody you're not, you'll be successful. So Punk is, and I said, okay, get on and do an interview and tell me how bad you hate McMahon. And we taped it.
Oh,
And he went off. And it wasn't shortly after that he got called up. But that was the hardest thing to teach people, because they would see somebody they liked and they would try to imitate them or be like them. And you can't do that. We all
yeah,
have
right.
an inner personality. The real personality is inside. And a lot of people are just too inhibited to let it out. And once you become uninhibited and you let out your real feelings and who you really are, then you'll be successful. And that's what Vern used to tell me, and he told all of us.
Yeah.
And that was part of a lot of the guys that go and train to be a wrestler. Nobody teaches them that other stuff, the whole psychology and the and they learn the moves, but they don't learn the psychology and the who you really are. And
Right.
once you establish that, you can be successful in the sport.
Right. Well, late the
Make
like
any
we
sense to you?
it does. Yeah, absolutely. And we mentioned Larry Zbysko, late the AWA. He had a run as the world champion, and I always thought Larry was so underappreciated as a world champion because such a good heel champion in my eyes. I always liked Larry, his work, obviously his work on the mic. He was a great talker. Do you feel that as well? I mean, obviously, right? The AWA was on the decline at this. I mean, at this time there was some struggles, not just with the AWA, but in the business in general. But I think because of some of that, I think Larry doesn't get fair credit, a fair look as a champion.
Well, that's a tough one for me to answer. It really is, because he married my sister.
Right. I was going to bring it up. He's obviously your brother-in-law, so it's a little.
But Larry, the style that the AWA had was different than what the WWE had. Or the WWF at that time, different than what Nashville, what they ran, different than what Georgia ran. Florida was more like Minnesota, but it was a little more, a lot of the wild stuff, because they had those personalities down there. Vern had such a background in wrestling that the people that came in had to wrestle. And Vern would send people up to Vince McMahon Sr. I'll give you a prime example. Billy Graham. Billy's wrestling for the AWA, and he's got a big feud going with Wahoo McDaniel. And he's going to finish up. So Vern gets him, he calls Vince Sr. and says, hey, I've got superstar Billy Graham here. So what they did, they'd send him up and he'd do TV for 6 months. Then he'd finish up for us, he'd go up there, he'd be successful. Bobby Duncan, Jack Lanza. It was all, they did it the same way. And they all were main events with Bruno.
Sure.
The New York guys would come to Minneapolis, and not one of them. Pedro Morales came in after being world champion. He never made it past the second or maybe the third match on the card because it was a different style.
Right, yeah.
The AWA was you had to be able to wrestle and prove that you were a wrestler. And Vern, I mean, it was holds and counter holds. I mean, the shit we do in that barn was unbelievable. 6 hours a day, 6 days a week. And we did that for 3 months. So when we came out of there, prime example, Jim and I went to Atlanta. They sent us down there to wrestle Bob Orton Sr. and Dick Slater. Our first match, we're in Columbus, Ohio. We walk in the locker room, it was Brute Bernard. And I went down and sat down by him. I said, "Hi, I'm Greg Gagne." He says, "Your father is a sucker." I won't say all of it. There's another part to the front of that. Well, I'm sure he thought you were too. And he looked at me. I said, "Hey, if you have a problem with me, hey, what do you need? What do we need to do?" So him and his manager got to walk to the other locker room. So Jim and I got up and we followed him in there. And I sat down and said, "Hey, do we have a problem?" And he said, "No, we don't." But we all had a reputation coming out of Vern's camp that we were pretty salty. I mean, we not only knew how to wrestle professional, but we knew how to submission wrestling and how to handle ourselves. And that really, the light went on for Jim and I that, you know what? These guys respect us quite a bit.
Yeah.
We never backed down from anybody. So then we went out that night and we wrestled on the second match against Rip Hawk and what was the big guy's name? Dr. Jerry Graham.
Yep.
And they were at the end of their career.
Yeah.
And we ended up wrestling like 22 minutes with them. And nobody knew us in Columbus, Georgia. The place was just sold out and it was standing. And guys were pissed off because they couldn't follow our match. And the booker then, instead of getting us ready for Orton and Slaughter, we had to wrestle Bob Backlund and Jerry Briscoe in clean matches for the next 2 weeks. And we went into Barnett and I said, "Jim, you brought us in here to wrestle your champions, and we're wrestling clean matches every night. And we're missing all these people. We're missing Denver and San Francisco and Chicago and Milwaukee. And those are big paydays for us. And we only made $500 a week in Georgia. Shit, we'd make more than that in one night in Denver." So after 2 weeks, we just said, "We're done. We're
Yeah.
going." I mean, so the biggest difference between the AWA and what the WWF at that time was doing, theirs was punching and kicking. Larry fit in perfect with that. That style. When you got back to the AWA, you had to wrestle. Larry was pretty good. But we had a harder time with him than anybody I think we were in the ring with. And it just, we couldn't get the crowd into it.
Yeah.
And I don't, it, because his style was slowed down, methodical, and it wasn't the pace that you needed in the AWA. I mean, he could wrestle, he was good that way, but it was just it was a slower, methodical type match. And our championship matches were solid. They told a story, and Larry was good at doing that, but he never really got accepted that well by the public as a world champion
Right.
because his style was so different.
Right.
Does that make any sense to you?
It does. Yeah. And during that time, but late 90, the AWA kind of went active. It officially closed up in 1991. From your side, right, because you were obviously quote unquote management, essentially. What led to the decline and the closing there of the AWA? What I mean, everybody says McMahon, 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 but
That's what it was.
yeah.
I mean, when I ended up working for the WWE.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So we're on the plane going to Los Angeles from New York. And Stephanie's in front of me, Triple H. Vince is over to the right. We're on their jet. I'm behind Stephanie. She turns around and she says, "My dad made Hulk Hogan." And
Oh.
I went, "Who are you kidding? Who are you kidding?"
Yeah.
And I got a look from everybody on the plane. I said, "He came to us. He couldn't hold his hands up." Vern worked with the Hulk on his interviews. He worked with them. The shirt tearing. We're wrestling in Chicago. And they put Jim and I with Hulk a lot so he could learn the pace, and we would sell our asses off, and all he had to do was make a comeback. And we're in Chicago. We're wrestling Bockwinkel, Stevens, and Pat Patterson, and Bobby Heenan in their corner. And they get in the ring, sold out, the Horizon. We come down and we get in the ring. And they bail out, and Hogan does his pose. I said, "Jim, grab his t-shirt." He grabbed one side, I grabbed the other, and we tore it off real slow. And those people went through the roof. And that's how he got that. And he'll tell you that. And he learned so much by being with us in tag team matches and the pace of the match and that. And then he had guys like Nick Bockwinkel to work with, and everybody he had to work with. You know, they're seasoned veterans, and they know how to help him along and get him established and get him over with the public.
Well, there was a reason that when Hogan went to New York, he wanted Bobby Heenan there. He wanted David Schultz there. The guys that helped make him in Minneapolis, he wanted them in New York with him.
He wanted all of us there.
That's right.
He called me. Brenzel left, you know, and Hogan, we came up. We got him. We had Christmas week coming up, and that was a big week. Everything was sold out. So prior to that, Hogan was going to Japan, and we had battle royals leading up to that. And Hogan was hoping to wrestle Bockwinkel for the title. Well, we finished up in Phoenix. Hogan got on a plane to Japan. Andre the Giant was in Vegas or in Phoenix that night. And on that plane was Vince McMahon, and flew to Japan with him. So we come back, and what he didn't know is CBS had come to Vern. And we had to sign a non-disclosure with them. What they wanted was a match they were going to put on in April on national TV. They wanted Hogan and Bockwinkel for the title. So the Christmas week, we put Hogan in six-man tag team matches with Jim and I all the way through. And it was sold out. All our big arenas were sold out. First night, Hogan doesn't show up in St. Paul. I called him at home. I said, "Hey, what are you doing? Why didn't you show up?" I cut a deal with McMahon. I said, "Well, you know, you can cut a deal." I said, "When do you go?" "Well, in January." I said, "Well, you know, the right way, the proper way to do it, Hulk, is you give your notice, you fulfill your commitments, and then you'll be released. There's no problem. But you don't just not show up." So all of our major cities he didn't show up in. He said, "Vince is paying me more to stay home." So once Hogan left, then they grab our announcer, Gene Okerlund. And then Hogan is telling McMahon who to get. They called. We had Gene Okerlund call me four or five times. "When are you coming?" I said, "I'm not walking out on my dad. What's wrong with you?" So, you know, he had his run in New York, and they didn't know what to do with him. Vince didn't create him. He was the Hulk, but he didn't know how to be the Hulk. Vern showed him a lot of things to do and how to make that comeback. Just start there and shake and shake. And he had all those good people, you know, Bockwinkel, Ray Stevens, all these great, Bobby Duncombe, all of them to work with, that made him look fantastic. And then in the tag match with us, he learned the pace. And, you know, we'd sell our asses off for the big ass and then tag him and he'd get that big comeback and go home. He was the hero.
Yep.
You know? So I don't hold it against him, but it was once that started, and then Vince started picking off, you know, he needed to get the AWA because we had the biggest territory, covered the biggest territory in the country, and we had the best talent. You know, I mean, he could have, you know, there was a few guys, Bobby Heenan came and told us he was leaving, but he fulfilled his commitments before he left. My partner Brunzell didn't. He didn't show up in Winnipeg in a sold-out arena when we were wrestling the Road Warriors for the world title and didn't show. And here is a guy who was trained, who Vern put all that time in, 3 months, 6 days a week, 6 hours a day, training him to be a professional wrestler. And he walked out. But they were throwing money at these guys, and Vince was telling them what to do, and they were doing it.
Right.
And then once you get started getting our talent, then you started grabbing all the other big names around the country. You know, Crockett's tried to, you know, hold in there as long as they could. They thought they could battle him. They had, you know, they had a lot of great talent there, but, you know.
Well, I mean, and it's something else, obviously, the AWA is known for, is you guys, a lot of people don't realize, you guys had the first action figures produced in America with Remco through from 84 to 86. And now you're back in the action figure
We're
business
back.
with Power Town. So tell us about a little bit about Power
Oh
Town,
my
how that
God,
came together.
it's so exciting. Steve Rosenthal, he was the gentleman that really came to, he first came to Vince way back and wanted to do action figures with him. And Vince kind of poo-pooed him off and he didn't know what to do. His kid was, they lived in the East Coast. His kid was a wrestling fan of the WWF at that time. And so that's why he went to Vince. And he used to tell the story. I went into Vince, I gave my proposal, and he said, "Well, you need to change this and this on the contract." He went back, changed the contract, came back. "Okay, I need some upfront money." So he gave him 25 grand up front. And he said, "But I need a couple more things changed." He went, came back a third time. He too was telling me the story. He says, "I get in there," and Vince says, "Hey, do you know these people?" And he had a magazine and he threw it at him. He says, "Yeah, these are my competitors." He said, "Well, I just signed a deal with them." So Steve was, you know, he's put this big pitch to Remco about these action figures. She didn't know what to do. And he found about the AWA and about Vern, and he came and cut a deal with us. And he'll tell you to this day, he said, it was so refreshing because here was someone, his word was his contract. We did a handshake, we did it, and it was the most successful action figure for wrestling that was ever put out. And he did it for 8 years and retired. So, you know, about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I get this phone call. "Greg, Steve Rosenthal." "Hey, Steve, how you doing?" He says, "I got an idea." I said, "What's your idea?" "I want to get back in the business, action figures." I said, "Well, the WWE has them, you know, AEW has them." I said, the only way I think it could be successful is let's tell the story of professional wrestling. Let's go back to 1950 when it was on TV. And I contact the families, you know, Hardwell Haggerty, Yukon Eric, Don Leo Jonathan, you know, Dick the Bruiser, the Crusher, Hans Schmidt, Vern, Wilbur Snyder, all the guys that made that DuPont network, Lou Thesz. "Can you get them?" I said, "I'll get them." So I started getting them, and we're up to 255 contracts. And we came out with our first line. You probably saw that. The Ultra line. We have two gentlemen from the McFarlane Group that help us with that. And we wanted to put out the best figures that have ever been put out. They're a little bigger than everybody else's. They're more realistic. We gave a story on the inside of the packet, and we've sold out. So now, just announced, and it just came out today, the Remco line. Did you see that line?
I did. I got to get that the Bobo Brazil. I'm
The Bobo Brazil. Well, I just
yeah.
talked to my partner in this is one of my partners is Magnum TA.
Right, sure.
And he's done a phenomenal job. He was on the first run, and on the Remco line, we've got the Rock and Roll Express, we got Nick Bockwinkel, Bobo Brazil,
Missing Link.
Missing Link. He's never been done.
Nope, Jim Duggan, I think, is in it.
Jim Duggan. So, we try to with our Ultra line, they're very expensive to make. It costs us 27,000 a mold. And we can only do about six at a time. So we've got it laid out now where every month, hopefully, we can come out with pre-sales. We need to do the pre-sales, and then the people order them, and then we'll get them made and we'll get them out to them. But I've got a report from TA just before we went on the air. He said they are going like crazy today on the Remco line. So if people want to do the pre-sale, get them now. When they're gone, they're gone.
Well, like I said, I'm definitely pre-ordering the Bobo. I'm a Midwest guy. I've always wanted a Bobo Brazil figure. And like I said, music to my ears when you mentioned the name Dick the Bruiser. Another guy, never in figure. And
He's going to have one. Him and the Crusher.
yeah.
Crusher's had one. Dick hasn't. He'll be coming up. He'll be in the Ultra line first, I would imagine.
Yeah. And
We
see, that's the
got
thing. Not only are these great figures, not only they look great and they're super detailed, but that's to me is the greatest thing is these guys that have never had figures, that have
No.
never been produced an action figure, and here they are, and that's just amazing.
Well, and I had to find the families, and I'm telling you, I would spend 8 to 12 hours a day on the phone every day.
Yeah, I
And
bet.
a great story. Don Leo Jonathan's wife, Rosalie. So I call her and tell her what we want to do, and she says, "Well, let me talk to my son," and talk to the son, gave him the pitch. And Rosalie was very nice. I mean, 85 years old, just sharp as a tack. So I called her up one day and I said, "Hey, Rosalie," and she's, "Oh." I said, "Rosalie, are you okay?" She says, "Greg, you caught me right in the middle of my workout." I said, "Fantastic." And they would all tell me stories about their husbands or their parents, and it was, and like I say, 8 to 12 hours a day. I was going out of my mind, but it was so refreshing, and it's something that we want to do for the talent that built this industry. Everybody says, "Oh, Vince McMahon." Well, there was before Vince. It was the DuPont Network that built professional wrestling. The Antonio Roccas and Edward Carpentiers, the Vern Gagne, Wilbur Snyders, Dick the Bruiser, Hans Schmidt, Yukon Eric. And we've got all those people signed. And we've got the little people signed. We've got the ladies signed. We've got announcers signed. So it's
Man.
just it takes a while to get them
Sure.
out. And that's why we're doing the pre-sales and the orders on them. I saw Kerry Von Erich the other day, $1,500 online.
Pretty wild. So what's the best way for people to follow Power Town? You're on pretty much, I think, all pretty much all social media platforms, right? Look up Power
Well,
Town
I
Wrestling.
look for in all of them. We're trying to get on all of them. That's where we're on it. But go to powertown.com or
And that's a
powertownwrestling.com. It'll get you there. It'll show you the figures and what's coming up and how to order. We should be. I saw big stuff on Instagram today on it. I'm sure our social media people are getting on it and it should be all over. But boy, don't miss the opportunity because once they're gone, they're gone.
Yeah, and like you said, the first series of the Remco line are they're on pre-order now, so people
They're
need to
on
jump on
pre-order
it.
now.
Go to powertown.com, get those pre-ordered, because like you said, that's it's when it's it, that's it. And I mean, unless you're going to pay that huge markup on eBay or whatever, it's best to get on it now and do the
Well,
pre-order.
take Barb Goodish,
Bruiser Brody.
Brody's wife. Her and I were at an event in North Carolina. And I said, "Bring some of the action figures. We give everybody 20." She brought six, and I brought six, and Stan Hansen was there. He brought six. We signed them. They wanted them signed. And they were giving us $125 for them. And we sold out of them
Yeah, that's right.
in just in like 20 minutes. Barb, we came back and she said, "Oh, I forgot to bring the action figure. So let's go up and get them." So we go up to our room, we came back, and we just walked around the bar with them, and we sold them all.
It's a collector's
So,
market. Well, and what about you?
yes.
Are you still, you said, you're in Charlotte. Are you still doing appearances out at some conventions and
Yeah,
things?
I do them. Yeah.
So what,
You know,
how can people keep, is there a central way to keep track of you personally and any appearances that you might be doing?
well, they can go, I guess they could go to my just the email if they wanted to email me.
Yeah. All right.
Greg.Onion27
Yeah. Well, you're also,
at
go ahead. I'm
gmail.com.
sorry. Yeah. And you're on Instagram, right? That's
I'm
your.
on Instagram, Ganya.Greg on Instagram. You can go there. And if you want me for an appearance there, and we work out a good deal for everybody,
Yeah.
we'll be
Sounds good.
there.
Cause I mean, I've seen you out there doing some
Mangan PA
things.
is another partner of mine, and he's a little harder for him to make appearances, but he will make them
Yeah.
if they're close enough for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I've seen you out there a few times with Jim doing some high flyer
Yep.
appearances, things like that. So, yeah, you can follow Greg. Like I said, Greg gave his email there. If you need to reach out to him for any, business propositions, he'll listen to
Or they can go
him.
to you and you can get to me.
I can do that. Sure. Yeah. They can
About
come through
that?
me and I'll pass it along too.
And you
But,
can be my booker and you'll get your percentage.
all right. Well, I may need a percentage in action figure. That's, I mean, maybe I'll take my booking
Well,
fee.
we'll work something out for you.
I hear you
You
have the
get us
hookup.
booked and we'll work something
I hear you have the hookup on that. Yeah. So,
Yeah.
well, Greg, thank you for coming on and talking to
Well,
me.
thank you for having me.
There was so much. I mean, we talked to nearly an hour, and I mean, we could have talked all evening. There's so much to your career and what you've been involved in. I mean, we barely even touched the
Well, if you ever
surface.
want to do another one, just give me a holler. You got my
Absolutely.
information.
Yeah, I would absolutely
You got
love to
my
do
phone
that.
number. Don't give it out to anybody else,
No,
please.
that's just you and me. Just
You're my booker now.
as your
You're my
booker,
agent.
I'm keeping that confidential.
All
Yeah.
right. You can tell
Yeah.
everybody every week that we're available, you
That's
and I.
right.
Ladies and gentlemen, Wrestling Fans International Association is back. That's right, the premier fan club association of the 1970s and 1980s has been revived and is back in business. Join today. It's free at thewfia.org. That's thewfia.org. You can also join us on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/WFIA1969.
All right, welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am Dave Dynasty. Thank you to Greg Gagne for coming on and speaking with me today. Thank you for that great interview. Hopefully you enjoyed it as much as I did recording it. If you follow my other podcast, This Is Extreme, and have been watching on social media and listened to this set, you know that This Is Extreme is coming to an end. I will continue to support ECW former talent and everything because I still do love ECW. But if I do speak to any former personnel or talent from ECW, it's just going to be right here in on Wrestling Nostalgia. I think streamlining things down to one podcast and fewer social media accounts and everything is just something that I really need to do to be more efficient with my time. I have some projects that I'm working on, some big projects that I've not yet announced. Lots of fun things in the works. So I just really need to make sure that I'm keeping that balance properly, and I am hoping, and I'm not guaranteeing, I'm not giving any promises yet, but I am hoping that by doing this, though, that I will also be able to perhaps switch the Wrestling Nostalgia back to a weekly format. There's so many guys I want to talk to in this podcast. It's really easy to line up interviews for Wrestling Nostalgia because it's a little more wider, topic, right? I mean, the ECW thing, there's a narrow, much more narrow pool of potential guests that I'm pulling from. And sometimes it's hard to nail those down. It's much, much easier for me to get a guest on Wrestling Nostalgia. So it's much easier to get those interviews done and in the bag. So it doesn't take as much time. There's not as much legwork and behind the scenes communications and so on to get things lined up for this. So I'm hoping I can switch Wrestling Nostalgia back in the near future to a weekly format. That's my goal. I really missed having a weekly episode come out of it. So hopefully that will be a positive that will come out of this negative. And if you don't listen to it, well, then no harm, no foul. What you may just wind up getting is more wrestling nostalgia content. So yay for you. So until next episode. Thank you for supporting. Excuse me, I'm all flustered now. Thank you for supporting. Make sure you subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. Make sure you follow me on all social media outlets. But until next episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and keep on growing.